Working.
Yep. Okay. Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Before we start, next week we are taking a 1 week break right before summer vacation, and then we'll be hopefully resuming in the next week. I guess we'll be updating on the WhatsApp group, but next week there won't be a class. Yeah. All right. So this week is Parshas Balosra. Unfortunately, the printer ran out of ink as we were printing these source sheet copies. So we'll have to I'll just summarize them for you. In general, the reason I usually bring the source sheets, and I do like to, there's a few different ways of like learning or hearing a shiur. Sometimes you go to a shiur and what you learn is, let's say, like what I would call like the Dvar Torah version. So if I was sitting at a Shabbos table and saying a Dvar Torah, I wouldn't go through like all the technicalities before getting to the point, right? When I'm saying a Dvar Torah, I just sort of like give over the main point and that's it. But I feel that there's a value when we're at a class that first, when we go through the back and forth that's actually inside of the text itself and we explore that, then first of all, the explanation that comes afterwards is much richer because you've gone through that whole process of really building up and understanding what the whole point is. Also, it connects us to the actual text, which is an important thing, to be connected to the Torah and finding the personal value and the personal meaning. So if we just go straight to the personal meaning, sometimes it takes us a little bit away from the fact that we're finding the value from the text itself. So that's just why I like to actually go into the text. But today we'll have to do a little summary, and hopefully we'll be able to follow along because there are a few technicalities over here in the beginning, but hopefully it will be fine. Okay, so in this week's parsha, we speak about the concept of Pesach Sheni. So first it talks about Pesach, about bringing the Karban Pesach. If you read through this week's parsha, you'll read about bringing the Karban Pesach. And then after it discusses the Karban of Pesach, it says, but there were a group of people that were Tamei Nefesh, which means that they were Tamei Meis. They were in contact with a corpse, and they weren't able to bring the Karban Pesach. And these men came and they said that we're Tamei Nefesh, but then they asked and they said, the language of the pasuk is Lama Nigara. Why should we be left out? Why should we be left out of bringing the Karban Pesach? Because one of the qualifications for bringing the Karban Pesach is to be ritually pure. So, and it takes a while, it takes a couple of days to actually become ritually pure. It takes 7 days to go through the process of purity. So there are different types of tumah, and different types of tumah take a different amount of time to become pure. When it comes to Tamei Meis, it's a 7-day process. So these people came and they said, why should we be left out? Lebildi hikrivas karban Hashem, from bringing this karban to Hashem. B'mayadai, in its time, b'saych b'nei Yisrael, amongst the Jewish people. Why are we left out of bringing the Karban Pesach in its time amongst the Jewish people? V'yamar lehem Maisha, and Maisha said to them, Imdu v'eshma ma yitzava Hashem lachem. Let's hear, what does Hashem have to say about this? Let's forward this question. Let's forward this question on to Hashem. You know, you have a valid point. Why should you guys be left out from bringing this karban, from participating in this mitzvah? It's like a once a year mitzvah. It's not like it comes up all the time. So there is this feeling of being left out. Like imagine if 1 year you weren't able to eat matzah at the Seder. We would feel like we're missing out on a certain experience. So what did Hashem say? Hashem said, Dabar al b'nei Yisrael, Lemar ish ish ki yiyah tamei lenefesh. If a man is tamei, ay b'darach r'cheka, or he's very far away, lachem, from them, ay l'daris seichem, for you guys that are asking right now, ay l'daris seichem, or for generations that come after this. So this is the law that will be forever. V'asa pesach l'Hashem, they could make a pesach for Hashem, B'chaydash Hasheni, in the second month, which is the month of Iyar, B'arba Asar Yayim, on the 14th day, Bein Arbarim Yasu, I say, Al Matzeh Simrayim Yechluhu, on the 14th day, the same, you know, Pesach Rishon is on the 14th day of the month of Nisan at night, that's when you bring the carbon Pesach. Hashem says you get a second chance. And we institute this law of Pesach Sheni. And so we're all familiar probably with this idea that there is Pesach Sheni. These days we do tend to commemorate it. We try to eat matzah on Pesach Sheni to commemorate the day of Pesach Sheni, even though we are not bringing the carbon Pesach anyway. So let's say I'm going to throw out an interesting halachic question. Let's say it's a little too late for it to be this year. Unfortunately, we passed it. But let's say Mashiach comes on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Okay, so Pesach passed, and it's Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and Mashiach comes, and all the Jewish people go back to Eretz Yisrael, and Rosh Chodesh Iyar gives us 14 days. Yeah, okay, and we all go through the process of ritual purity. We all purify ourselves in the process. Mashiach's here, no more tumah. So we all go through that process of purifying ourselves. And then Pesach Sheni comes around. Would we bring the Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni? Because we didn't get the opportunity to bring it on the first Pesach because we weren't obligated. Because it says that we're only obligated to bring the Karban Pesach. It's actually a whole debate whether being that now we do have access to Har HaBayis, so it's a little bit of a complex question, but I think most Poskim will agree that we are not obligated in bringing the Karban Pesach currently. But if Mashiach came on Iyar, would we have to bring the Karban Pesach? And this question is asked a little bit differently in the Gemara. It says, let's say somebody converts in the middle of this time period, right? Again, let's choose Rosh Chodesh Iyar as our day. Right? So someone converts on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So they're now a Jew. Or in the case of someone who becomes a gadol, a katan that becomes a gadol, someone has a bar mitzvah on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So does this person, the Gemara say, bring the Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni? And so to set up the scenario, it means on the first Pesach, you are not obligated, but on the Pesach Sheni, you are obligated. So the first Pesach, not obligated. Pesach Sheni, you are obligated. Are we going to bring the Karban Pesach? And of course, it's going to be differing opinions, right? So Rabbi says that you bring the Karban Pesach, that this convert, or they don't bring the example of Mashiach coming, that one I just made up. So I'm assuming, though, that it sounds in my mind like it fits into this, that it fits into the same category, or when Mashiach comes, or someone who's growing up, they would bring the Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni, and they would sort of fulfill their obligation. Rabbi Nassan says that they don't. Why don't they? Because the whole obligation, that because Pesach Sheni, your obligation of Pesach Sheni only rests on the fact that you were obligated on Pesach Rishon. So you're only obligated to do Pesach Sheni if you were obligated for Pesach Rishon. And that is the opinion of Rabbi Nassan. And so to understand a little bit the reasoning of their opinion, we're going to go into the Gemara, goes further and explains how these people explain what is this whole concept of Pesach Sheni. So Rabbi calls Pesach Sheni Yom Tov Bifnei Atzmai, that it is its own holiday. So Rabbi calls Pesach Sheni its own holiday, which is why he says that you would bring the Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni, even if you weren't obligated in the first one, because it's its own story, it's its own holiday. Yes, of course, it's connected to the first Pesach. It's an extension of the first Pesach, but it still obtains its own validity as its own day, and therefore you would bring the Karban Pesach on the second Pesach, even if you weren't obligated in the first. And then the other opinions are there's two different interesting opinions. So Rabbi Nassan holds that the second Pesach is only sort of it's hard to even come up with a word that would explain it in English. In Hebrew, the word is tashlumen, that it basically sort of, it makes up, but it doesn't make it up fully. It's not a tikkun. It's not a fixer for the first one. It's just another opportunity. To explain a little bit further, if a person didn't bring the first Karban Pesach, he didn't bring the first Karban Pesach, and he didn't bring it purposefully, meaning that he could have brought it, but he didn't bring it. He intentionally It's what we would call a bemazed on purpose. He intentionally wasn't interested. He's not a religious person, let's say. He knows about carbon based stuff, but he's not interested in bringing it. He can't be bothered right now. He just doesn't bring the first carbon pesa. So the punishment for that is actually kares, which means that their soul is cut off, which there's different interpretations of what it means that the soul is cut off. But it's a pretty intense, heavy punishment. It's high up on the list of bad things that you can do for God. So if you intentionally didn't bring it for the first carbon pesach, and then you have a change of heart, you do tshuva, and so you bring the pesach sheni, you're not going to get rid of your punishment. It's just another opportunity to do the mitzvah that you didn't get the chance to do the first time around. But you're not going to fix your past mistake. That's one opinion. So they're connected, obviously. This is Rabbi Nassim's opinion, which says that they're dependent on each other. It's not a complete fix for the previous one. And then Rav Chananya ben Akiva disagrees. And he says, no, it's tikanta derishon. It actually fixes the first one, which means he says it like this. It's that the punishment goes into hold until after Pesach Sheni, right? They're so connected that it's not like the time, if you intentionally did not bring the carbon Pesach the first time, you're sort of in a state of limbo. Okay, you now still have a chance. It's a second chance, a literal second chance. You can bring it on Pesach Sheni. And if you bring it on Pesach Sheni, no punishment. And the punishment is not going to go into effect until after Pesach Sheni takes place, because it is an extension of the first one. And there is this opportunity built into this mitzvah. Literally built into this mitzvah is the opportunity to fix it, to do it again. Okay? So this is the technical part that we had to get through. So we have these three different opinions. Either it is a Yom Tov for itself, or it is just another chance to do the mitzvah, but not a chance to fix the past, or it's actually a chance to fix the past. And it is obviously intrinsically connected with Pesach Rishayim. So the interesting thing is that the Rambam, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, where he counts all the mitzvahs, there's different people who count. We know there are 613, but there are different ways to get to that 613. There are different, there's the Baha counts as it one way, and the Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvos counts it another way. So often, if we want to understand the nature of a mitzvah, we look and we see, is this an independent mitzvah? We look, did the Rambam count it as an independent mitzvah? And the Rambam counts Pesach Sheni as an independent mitzvah. So we say, okay, that means whose reasoning does he go with? He goes with the reasoning of Rebbe that says that it's a day for itself, right? That it's a Yom Tov for itself, and therefore he counts it as its own mitzvah. But it's still strange, because even if you are saying that it's a Yom Tov for itself, it's literally called Pesach Sheni, right? It's like literally called the second Pesach. It obviously is inherently intrinsically connected to the first Pesach. So if we're counting it as an individual day, we have to say that there's something different about the service, the way that we do this mitzvah. There's something underlying the difference between the first Pesach and the second Pesach. What is like the underlying difference between these two? So the Rebbe explains that these are actually two, Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, are two different paths in our Avodas Hashem. So before we understand their paths, let's also just state one other difference between them, or really two other differences between them. There's another difference between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, very obvious, blatant differences. The first one is that on Pesach Sheni, you can have your matzah in a sandwich with your bread, if you wanted to. Doesn't sound like such a delicious sandwich, right? But you could like sandwich the matzah in between, have it to be the crunch on your bread. I mean, if you were eating the Pesach Sheni, the carbon Pesach, it would probably be the carbon Pesach sandwich, it would be different. But I'm saying, technically speaking, you're allowed to eat chametz. That was my whole point. So technically speaking, you can have chametz around. You can see the chametz. You can have the chametz on your table. On Pesach Sheni, you're allowed to have chametz. Versus on the first Pesach, no chametz around. Make ourselves crazy. Clean everything up. No chametz in sight. The second difference between them is that the Pesach is a full, is the beginning of a 7-day holiday versus Pesach Sheni is this one isolated day. So in order to understand these differences, we're going to get into what is the difference between the Avodah, between these 2 days. So the difference between them is this. There's two general paths in our Avodas Hashem that we can take. There's two different ways. There's two different approaches that people end up on when it comes to serving God. One approach would be called the Avodas HaTzadikim, the service of a tzaddik. And the other approach is called the Avodas HaBal Tshuva, the service of a Bal Tshuva, someone who does teshuva. Now, the problem is that colloquially we use these words as like a tzaddik is someone who is far removed and perfect and totally committed. And the Bal Tshuva, often we use it as like a sociological phenomenon, right? Someone who was, let's say, born not religious and becomes more religious is called a Bal Tshuva. But when we're talking about the Avodas HaTzadikim and Avodas HaBal Tshuva, we're not talking about these titles, these people. We're taught anyone can be a Bal Tshuva, even if you were born to the frumest family and you stay totally frum, and you on and externally you look exactly the same from the day you were born, you can still be doing the Avodas HaBal Tshuva. And the tzaddik can even be someone who's is sociologically a Bal Tshuva, as in they didn't grow up religious, they didn't know about Judaism, and then they learn about Judaism and they start practicing, they could be doing Avodas HaTzadikim. Why? Because Avodas HaTzadikim basically means that you follow a, what we call a Derech HaYashar, a linear path. The tzaddik, he's born, either he learns right away about it, or maybe, like we said before, it could be a Bal Tshuva, somebody who didn't know anything about Torah. But then he is informed, or she, right? Then the person is informed about Judaism. And as soon as they're informed and they start learning, they take on doing mitzvahs, or as a child, they start doing mitzvahs and they follow the straight and narrow path. They do everything that they're supposed to do and they proceed in that upward direction motion constantly. So let's say even if we said the person who is the sociological, the person who is the Bal Tshuva, we know that a Bal Tshuva can't start taking on 613 mitzvahs at one time. That would be impossible. But let's say as soon as they learn about something, they take it on in a slow, methodical motion, right? So maybe they are keeping Shabbos and not fully keeping kashrus, but then they learn the laws of kashrus, so then they take on the laws of kashrus, and then they start davening 3 times a day. So slowly but surely, they're following in the right path, and that would be called the path of the tzaddik. Because the path of the tzaddik is this direct, straight path, where as soon as you learn, you're committed, and you keep moving in that upward motion. That's the avodah of the tzaddik. The avodah of the Bal Tshuva comes in when things just don't start moving so straight anymore. So I think even if you are not someone who is a sociological Bal Tshuva, we've all experienced times when we haven't necessarily found it so easy, where we don't feel so connected, where we start to not really care so much, and we start to fall away, and the path basically ends up looking more like this. It's not a straight path. It's a much more jagged path. That's the path of the Bal Tshuva. And Pesach, regular Pesach, represents the Avodas HaTzadikim. And Pesach Sheni represents the Avoda of the Bali Tshuva, the work of the Bal Tshuva. By Pesach Sheni, it says in Yecheskel and in other places that Pesach Sheni was considered the birth of the Jewish, the first Pesach was considered the birth of the Jewish people. Now that's when the Jewish nation was born. So this is our beginning, is Pesach. And when someone is born, they have a totally clean slate, right? Totally clean slate when you're born. A baby is totally innocent. Their soul is pure. You have a totally clean slate. It's similar to when someone converts, it says, right? It was like as if we converted at that time to become Jewish. And when someone is converted, everything in the past is wiped away, as in now it's an opportunity for a fresh start. And they even, they had the bris milah then, right before they left Mitzrayim. And they're like little babies. And quite literally, so this is the start of my path as a tzaddik, of following in the straight and narrow and following in a direct path of connection with Hashem. But then, a few months later, right, we say that there's, or in the desert, excuse me, these people come up to Hashem and they say, you know, we've become tamei. Now, in this case, the people who became tamei, it wasn't that they actually sinned, because it says that the, who are these people, that they were actually the ones that were carrying the bones of Yosef to bury them in Eretz Yisrael. But they, so they didn't actually sin. But in general, the concept of tuma is connected to sin, because tuma, impurity, specifically tumas meis, comes from the Eitz Hadas. The whole concept of tuma only began with the Eitz Hadas. Before then, there was no death. And so with the death is the energy that is not godly, right? Something that is alive is godly. When there's death somewhere, it means there's the removal of godly energy. That is similar to what we call sin. Sin is the similar removal of godly energy. So Toma represents sin. Tomas Meis is connected to Eitz Hadas, which is connected to the entire, to all of sin. And what do these people say? They come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they come from a place of brokenness and from a place of hurt. They say, why should we be left out? Originally, there's only the first Pesach, but they say, why should we be left out? And what does this do? This triggers in Hashem to create a whole new holiday called Pesach Sheni. If they wouldn't have turned to God, to Moshe, and complained from a place of bitterness, there wouldn't be a Pesach Sheni. The only reason that it wasn't part of the original plan, the only reason it was created, is because these people moved towards Hashem. What do we call this moving towards Hashem? What do we call this moving towards Hashem from a place of like, of feeling distance and feeling broken from the distance? We call that teshuvah. Teshuvah is that movement we make in a relationship. Very often you can find in any relationship, this can happen in friendships, it can happen in marriage, it can happen between parent and child, where slowly but surely there's like distance seeping into the relationship. You know what, they less turning to and more turning away. Less phone calls, and they slowly but surely start to peter out. And there's two ways that can go. Either it could just continue petering out until there's no relationship anymore. Or one person can turn to the other person and say, I feel so sad that we're not connected anymore. I feel so, it's killing me that this relationship is not what it used to be. It's really hurting me that we don't have a sense of connection anymore, that we don't talk anymore, that we don't have any depth in our relationship anymore. And in that moment of just turning toward that other person and being the one to acknowledge that the separation, that the distance is happening, and then reaching out to try to reconnect, that's what we call teshuvah. That's the motion of teshuvah. That's the movement of teshuvah, is turning back and from a place of recognizing that there's distance. And in doing that, what happens is that we triggered an entirely new flow of energy from God. In natural order, according to the Torah, according to the way it's supposed to be, there's only supposed to be one Pesach. But then what happened? When we sin and when we mess up, we sort of veer away from the natural order, right? We veer away from the original plan. We veer away from what is really supposed to be. That's what happens when we're in a state of sin. We veer away from how things are supposed to be. When we call to Hashem from there, what is the solution? What does the solution need to be? The solution needs to come from outside of natural order. Because within natural order, there isn't space for messing up, really. There's a lot more rigidity because things were established according to their rhythms and according to their like a set plan and a set order. And so the machine is well oiled and it functions as it's supposed to. And then when I break the machine, that's what happens when we sin or when we move away from God, is we sort of break the machine. So once you break the machine, it's supposed to be, that's it, it's over. But if we turn to God, he creates a new reality for us. He creates Pesach Sheni. He says, it's not too late. It's okay. We don't have to function just within the machine. I'm God, right? I made this machine, but like, who cares? This machine might be broken, but we can function outside of this machine. Our relationship is not dependent on this machine. We can create a new reality. I'll give you your own day because you're turning to me from that you still want to be connected to me. As long as you still have this desire to be connected to me, we'll make a whole new program. Even if this machine is broken, we'll make a whole new program. We'll start something new. That's the avodah of the Baal Tshuva. And so we can see that there's something that we achieve in this moment of Teshuva. And this is something that, again, like, you'll only hear like the Rebbe say this. It's a little bit dangerous to say. Because, see, the tzaddik is the pinnacle. The tzaddik is what we all strive on a certain level to be. He's doing everything right. But when you stay on the straight and narrow path, the only area that you're influencing is the straight and narrow path. It's only when you sort of go off of that path that you're able to then influence the areas that are off of that path. So to maybe make a little more sense, when it comes, right, there are certain things that a tzaddik is able to transform. Things that are permitted, the tzaddik can transform, right? Anything that is permitted, the tzaddik can transform. There's two different ways that we transform the world. Either through subduing it, where we subdue a desire, or if you're on an even higher level, you can actually transform something physical through utilizing it in a way that's holy. So a tzaddik is able to transform almost the entire world. What can't a tzaddik transform? A tzaddik can't transform pork, right? How does the tzaddik interact with pork? How does the tzaddik do the avaida with pork? Is by not eating it. But the Baal Tshuva can transform the pork because he ate it. And then if he returns and he does a proper teshuva, it says, Dainais nasa lezachias. His sins, even if they were intentional, become merits. So he's transforming it on almost a higher level than the tzaddik. That pork is ending up on a higher level than where the tzaddik did, which is just pushing it away, which sort of just makes it negligible. And then over here, what happens is that the Baal Tshuva turns it into something that is actually positive and good. Now we have to understand that obviously we can't go around like intentionally sinning in order to then transform these things into something positive, right? That needs to, we can't like sort of, it's not about like tricking the system and trying to get it to work in that way. But if a person has already sinned, there is always opportunity for him to reconnect to Hashem and to do teshuva and to fix that moment from the past. So if we go back to what we said were the differences between the first Pesach and the second Pesach, we said the first Pesach, no chametz can be around, and the second Pesach, you can have chametz around. And this is because we said that, we've talked about this in previous classes, how chametz represents ego, and ego represents things that are a place of absence of God. So when you're in the tzaddik mindset, you got to push the chametz away. We're subduing the negativity. Versus when you're in the Baal Tshuva mindset, on Pesach Sheni, we can have the chametz around. Because that's the whole point of the Baal Tshuva, is to engage with the world and be able to transform it. The second is that the first Pesach is 7 days. And this is because, in general, 7 represents a certain completion within natural order. 7 days of the week, there are 7 spheres, 7 midas. We see that in many, across most cultures, there's a 7-day week, even though they never had like communication about that, right? There's a certain natural order to the number 7. We talk about how 8 is transcends nature and 7 is within nature. And that is because the first Pesach is, again, that Avodah of the Tzaddik, which is following along the natural order of the world, versus second Pesach is the Avodah of the Baal Tshuva. And it's only one day. And why is it only one day? Because that is the whole point of Teshuvah, is that it can be accomplished in a moment. Teshuvah is something that is not necessarily, it's not something where you're, it's not an avida where your work, it's something that often it takes many moments because we do many mess ups and then we need many, many moments to reconnect. And I think we'll see this in a relationship as an example as well, where, you know, there's most of the time, it's not like people in a relationship will fight one time and make up one time and that's it. It's all better. And chances are you'll have that same, the same thing that you, that you've been fighting about, you'll probably fight about it 100 more times, even after you've resolved it. Because we all have our patterns and we all have our unique personalities that, well, like usually there's the same things that rub against each other in a relationship. And so does that mean that every time I turn back towards and try to fix the relationship, it's insincere, am I fixing? No, it's a real mend for this moment. Might it come back up again? Perhaps. And then I can, again, genuinely turn back towards a person and say, you know what, we're not going to let this get in the way. And it can happen over and over again. But that moment of reconnection is generally, it's a moment. It's not a lengthy endeavor. It's a moment of feeling a true feeling of yearning for God. That's all it is. And therefore, Pesach Sheni doesn't need to be a full 7 days. It can happen in just a moment. There's the famous story of Rav Elazar ben Dordaya. The Gemara talks about how he did a whole bunch of very not so good things in a public way where everyone saw that he was a big sinner. And then right before his death, he has a moment of teshuva. And Rebbe says, I'm jealous of you. And why is he jealous of him? Rebbe, who's a big tzaddik, is jealous of him because in Shah Achas, he managed to acquire the entire world in one moment through his moment of teshuva. And versus the tzaddik is doing hard work his whole life to get there. And that person is able to achieve that in one moment. And just to bring it back all the way back to what we opened up with at the beginning, we spoke about how there's three different understandings of what Pesach Sheni is. Either it's a holiday for itself, or it is a tikkun for Pesach Rishon, or it's just another opportunity to do it without being a tikkun. So here's this, it's a very interesting way of talking about this. The Rebbe explains how these are basically three different levels of teshuva. The first level of teshuva is Takanta, that it's a tikkun, that tshuva is a tikkun, that built into every chait, built into every sin, there is a possibility to reverse it. There's an opportunity to change it and to elevate whatever I just did. Built into every single sin is this opportunity to fix it. And like, we really have to process that, that like, I'm really never lost. I'm really never, I can't push the boundaries too far. I can always come back. It's built into how this works, is that if I reach out, I can transcend the system. The second type of tshuva is this idea of tashlumin. We mentioned this example before. If I asked you, who is not able to actually do tshuva? There is a case where it says that someone can't do tshuva. Who is that person? The person who says, echdev ashov. That I'm going to sin and then I'm going to do teshuva. So I'm going to sin intentionally because I know I can always make it up. So that person can't do teshuva. So again, this is also, again, like the power of the Rebbe to always be melamed tzchus for everyone and to give everyone the opportunity to return. He says, yes, that is true. That if you say echdev ashuv, officially you can no longer do teshuva. And that's like that example that we said before of tashlumin, where we said that the person, if they missed it, that's it. They're chayav kares. They're not going to be able to get rid of that punishment. Even if they bring the Pesach Sheni, they're going to rectify, but they're not going to be able to get rid of the punishment. And the Rebbe says that if even if a person says Echdav Ashav, you can still bring the Pesach Sheni. If you have a moment after you did the Echdav Ashav, what is the problem with saying, I will sin and then I'll do Teshuvah? The problem is that it's not genuine, right? Your Teshuvah is obviously not genuine if you if you had intention in your sinning that you were going to return. It's like, it's not genuine, right? If after you did that, you then do have a genuine calling to do Teshuvah, you can still do it. So if after you mess up, like we say, if after you mess up, you still have a genuine calling to do Teshuvah, you can do Teshuvah. Even if you said Echdav Ashav. Because the problem with the Echdav Ashav is that there was a lack of sincerity. And if there is, if the sincerity does come into the picture, you can still return. It's not too late. And that's why we say that even if that person, even if we're not saying he's fixing that moment of sin, he can still come and bring that Pesach, that Karban Pesach again. And then the last level of tshuva that we're talking about over here is the fact when we say it's a regal b'fnei atzmai, it's its own holiday. What kind of tshuva is that? That's talking about the tshuva of a tzaddik. Because this whole time we've been talking about the difference between the avodas hatzaddikim and the avoda of the baal tshuva. And on some level we said that the baal tshuva can accomplish more than the tzaddik does. So we give the tzaddik the opportunity to do teshuvah as well. And what does that mean? That means that he's not doing teshuvah for a sin. He's not doing teshuvah for doing something wrong. It's the same motion that we've been discussing this whole time, where I'm sensing a feeling of, it's this turning towards someone from a place of, I want to be closer to you. So a tzaddik, let's say, through meditating, how even in this, you know, you can meditate on how far we distant we are from Hashem himself. And that could, even if you've never done something wrong, that could arouse within the tzaddik the desire to do teshuvah and to connect with Hashem. And he too can then achieve this motion, this aveda of teshuvah. But we're going to go back and say that even though the tzaddik can do teshuvah, it's still never going to accomplish what the person who sinned can accomplish. Because he's still not going to take those things that were impossible to connect to God and connect them to God. Right? He is maybe drawing himself closer to Hashem. But even the aveda of the tzaddik when he does teshuvah is not like the aveda of the baal tshuvah. The baal tshuva is able to accomplish something that only someone who messes up can accomplish. And so I think that this is just that when we do mess up and when we do feel like we are distant from Hashem, first, I mean, let's go back one step. First of all, first, before this, we need to care at all about our relationship with God. Right? We need to care. We need to be sad. We need to find a space to be sad when I'm distant. And then if I do, I'm able to find that space to be sad when I'm distant. If I'm able to feel left out because I don't have an opportunity to do something, I don't have an opportunity to do a mitzvah. If I'm able to access that place within me that feels very broken, that it is not 100% connected to God. Once I am able to access that place, then anything that I do, any sin that I do, any time I mess up, I can look at it as an opportunity now to connect closer to Hashem, to this moment is not lost, this thing is not lost. And in fact, I'm able to actually achieve even greater transformation through this process. But first, again, accessing that place of desiring it. Which is hard. I think a lot of times it's hard to even desire it because we feel so just numb and distant. So if we can find that space inside of us that does feel sad, then we can reconnect and no moment is lost and no moment is for no reason and nothing is unredeemable. Everything is redeemable. So we should all be able to experience that in a real way and take that with us. Yes, go for it.